So 2 weeks ago, we watched a video by Tim on his part one on love. And I'm not going to do part two. As I previewed it, it wasn't what I was expecting it to be. So I'm pivoting away from that and going to have probably most likely our last message on marriage today. So I just thought it didn't hit the mark that I thought it was going to hit. So anyway, you got one of my homemade messages this morning that is going to cover one more of those little lurking foxes that occur in marriages, and also just some marriage imperatives towards the end. So hopefully we can get through this today. But I thought it would be really good to talk about leaving and cleaving. That is one we haven't really talked about yet, and I think is impactful in marriages at some level, can be too impactful, and sometimes can keep a marriage from flourishing. So we'll kind of get into what that means here in a little bit. So that's kind of the way forward this morning, and it'll be the 10th of the foxes that we've talked about, or weeds in the garden. But I think it's probably right up there, or can be, particularly in certain seasons of the marriage life. But I thought I would start with looking at Genesis chapter 2, verses 18 through 24. There's really just one or two verses I wanted to hone in on here, but I thought it would be important to kind of give the context a little bit. So in verse 18, it says, "The Lord God said, it is not good for man to be alone. I will make a helper who is just right for him. So the Lord formed from the ground all the wild animals and all the birds of the sky. He brought them to the man to see what he would call them, and the man chose a name for each one. He gave names to all the livestock, all the birds of the sky, and all the wild animals. But still there was no helper just right for him. So the Lord caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. While the man slept, the Lord God took out one of the man's ribs and closed up the opening. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib, and he brought her to the man." I think that's really neat. He brought her to the man. "At last," the man exclaimed, "this one is bone from my bone and flesh from my flesh." I use the New Living Translation here because I think it captures Adam's response very accurately, biblically. He was like, oh, there's finally somebody for me. Because he just had all of these animals that he named, each having a mate, but he didn't have one. And he said, "She shall be will be called woman because she was taken from man." This, what does this refer to? The fact that she's a woman taken from man. This explains why man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife. And the two are united into one. So we really see the theological basis for man leaving his father and mother and marrying his woman. She's part of me. We are coming back to become one. So we get from this the doctrine of leaving and cleaving. This text, most texts will use the word leave and join. So we'll get into that a little bit. So here's a question for us, and this doesn't necessarily, you don't have to answer this from your standpoint, but like, what are some of the reasons that people don't leave or cleave? Or to ask the question the way it is here in the handout, who or what? So it could be a person or it could be something else. Might you need to leave, give up altogether, or reduce in order to properly cleave to your spouse? Like, what are some people or things that we might have to give up in order to cleave, leave and cleave to our spouse?
Your parents.
Okay.
My oldest son and his wife, they're both unbelievers, and he has plenty of issues. One of her issues is she will not, her family is top priority, even to an instance where it's become priority over him. And that has caused a lot of friction in their marriage. Where you don't have to abandon your family, but your spouse has to become more.
Exactly. That's a huge one. It's It's really a big one. I don't know if the term is used as much now as it, I just remember hearing it a lot when I was younger. So that's gray hair here would remember this, but you know, it would be said he's too attached to his mother. He's still attached to his mother's apron strings.
Yeah.
So I think cooks in the kitchen still wear aprons, but I mean, there's some truth to that. Like, still, that's his loyalty to his mother or his family, his mom and dad, his parents. So yeah, it's a huge one. I think that little word picture kind of indicated, you know, an adult son who's dependent on his mother, not willing to become autonomous, independent, and it can happen with a father too. I just think it's more likely to happen with a mother. And so you can see sometimes adult children that are still more tied to their parents and are afraid to or fail to leave and cleave and go find a wife and get married. So it's kind of an arrested place in life, and we see that, still see that. What else can become something that we need to give up or reduce? You might think back to your own time when you got married, like what are some things you had to adjust or change?
I think some of the ties that bind, particularly people who get married younger, are I'm on my parents' phone plan, or they've got my health insurance or my car insurance, or they actually own my car, or those mm-hmm. sorts of financial things that you don't consider as much when you're younger are some of the things that you need to cut off, particularly if you're getting married younger. You need to kind of stand on your own 2 feet a little bit.
Yeah, getting married 18, 19, 20, 21, when you really haven't fully left yet. Yeah, that can definitely be a thing. Needs to be that cut off at some point. And that isn't a harsh thing. You know, I think you come to the place where your parents play the role of where you're to honor them. We're to always honor our parents, for sure. But the loyalty and the priority has to become our spouse. If that doesn't happen, it's going to cause a lot of problems.
Sometimes it's the parent that's not allowing that. I mean, my mom was great about that, but I've seen situations where the mom needs to just get her nose out, and then that must be hard to kind of push and say no. Parents need to understand that as well.
For sure. I love your straight talk. Get her nose out of it, right?
Apron strings, the nose, the whole
yes,
thing.
Yes, yeah. We're talking the language of Kansas, right? So we,
could
the way we talk. So.
Possessions or a hobby. Maybe you're a young man that used to really like to play video games. Maybe you have to give up some of that at least. Or I know I had a brother-in-law, one of my older sisters, when they got married, he had an old hot rod. He's like,
yeah.
I can't fit my kids into this. It's and we can't afford extra vehicles, so I got to sell the hot rod so we can drive around a vehicle that all my kids can get into.
Yeah, great example. I think racing on weekends for that single guy is probably not going to happen once.
Right.
At some point, there has to be some adjustments made. What else? So yeah, I think hobbies, personal interest that you have.
Even personal preferences, I'll tell the story. Holly probably won't appreciate that I tell the story. Right after we got married, Holly was working nights in the hospital, and I was making some bows in our backyard. I was trying out one of my bows. I ended up shooting a rabbit in my backyard. She was asleep at the time. Cleaned the rabbit, because I was like, you know, I'm basically Jeremiah Johnson.
Yes.
Seven brides for seven brothers, going to go find me a wife or whatever, you know. Like. So I cleaned the rabbit, I left it in the sink, and she wakes up. I was working in the garage at the time, and I hear a scream come from the house. And so she found this, you know, rabbit carcass that's sitting in our kitchen. And it's one of those things where, in my mind, it wasn't anything. Right? Like, this is just a rabbit carcass.
Oh my gosh.
But the personal preference is, it's not just my household anymore. And so, setting aside those personal preferences, being in tune with what your wife appreciates and values is a good thing to do.
Is that the first and only time I assume that you've had it?
And now she helps me clean beer.
Wow.
Oh. Lord works miracles.
That's a perfect example. Mine was quail, you know. Shooting quail and frying them up, I thought it was really good, but Maria didn't appreciate it, so haven't done it since. I've had quail since, but I don't think I've, anyway. Don't bring animal carcasses, bird carcasses in the house.
I'm not married, but like sports, like, okay, Sunday afternoon football game or baseball game, and your wife want to watch homework, but a Chick-fil-A movie.
Yeah, I think
you have to combine. You have to say, okay, you can watch this, your football game, but you cannot watch this after that. You have to combine.
You really do become a unique household. Each family has its own qualities to it. So sports are a big one, hobbies, interests. I think friends can be another one. That you will have friendships change after you get married. You just will. You have less time. And if you have a friendship that is, you put more time into and more priority in your spouse, that's going to be an issue. And should be an issue. Like, that changes things. Doesn't mean you still don't have friends. Just your loyalty, your preference, your time goes to your spouse. I think sometimes some personal dreams have to be given up as well. So those have to be talked through and meshed together. So on the next page, God created marriage to provide a priority, which is to leave, and a permanent, which is cleave, companionship. Leaving means a shift in priority or loyalty, and cleaving or joining is the uniting of two into one and a cementing of the new family unit. That word join literally means to cement. Leave means to leave behind, and here speaks of the shift of the husband's loyalty and devotion from his parents to his spouse. And again, I just want to say, you still honor your parents. You're not rejecting them, but you are leaving your primary loyalty now is to your wife, or wife to her husband. Joined, I love this definition, literally means to glue one thing to another so that it cleaves or adheres, to unite, to cleave, to be united with, to join oneself too closely, to stick to. It is used metaphorically in this verse to describe the marriage bond, to adhere to closely, be faithfully devoted to. I've heard it said that a divorce is like taking the, you know, china, piece of china, and taking some of the engraving off of that, and how hard and difficult that is. That's undoing something that's been glued together can be really a tough thing to see. So I think it's one of the things that we need to look at is couples need to biblically diagnose and realign competing loyalties that can erode marital closeness over time. So I think that's something to do on an occasion, is think through, do I have some priorities or some loyalties that is harming, taking away, or chipping away at the cleaving, the marital closeness that can happen. And I got some reasons here, found this from something that Tim Bryant put out. Leaving and cleaving needs to be revisited as new seasons of life come. The first year of marriage, I think that's pretty obvious. That is really an adjustment time. Like, if you live close, this is particularly true in like rural areas, like if the husband lives close to his parents, maybe he was used to having lunch every day at his mother's house, right? And they're still 5 miles down the road or 2 miles down the road or in business together. Is he going to continue to do that every day? All those things have to be talked through as you get married in that first year. I think there's just a lot of decisions to make. Whose family are we going to go to for holidays? All those kinds of things. And can become How are we going to make our own unit, leave and cleave? First child, that can become an issue. A child can become a priority to the point that you're giving more time to a child than you are to your spouse. That marriage bond is still the priority relationship. A new job, new close friendships begin. I think that's one we talked about a little bit earlier, but just friendships that can begin to pull away from the primary friendship. New major interests that come along. Social groups or hobbies begin. Others could include first or last child leaving home. Elderly parents needing care. That can become a big one at certain seasons in life. In the counseling I do with Low Country, that has been surprising to me, the number of times that giving care to parents has become a big issue in the marriage. Like, it really, really cuts into that relationship. It has to be talked through and done well. Can you guys think of other seasons that leaving and cleaving needs to be revisited that aren't mentioned here? Sure, there could be others. I think what Marcy said earlier, sometimes you have to cut off things with that your parents may have been providing over time. That may not all be at the very first, but just gradually over time you have to do that. Well, here's a question for you. How do you know you need to give it up or adjust in order to leave and cleave? Like, what are some ways you would know that you need to do that?
It becomes a source of tension in your marriage.
Source of tension in your marriage. Yeah, I think that's pretty much right up there, right? What if your spouse thinks there needs to be an adjustment, but you don't? Then what do you do? Biblical counselors, what do we do?
Dr. Phil would say, how's that working for you? I mean, it is. If it's not working, then you need to get there. Whatever, prayer and compromise or whatever, counseling. Because you just can't leave that tension there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You got to talk it through. You got to communicate. It's amazing. Some of the couples I meet with, how little communication happens. Like, they're guessing what their spouse is thinking. Like, you have to be honest. You cannot fear your spouse. You cannot fear man to the point that you won't bring up issues or it'll just continue to fester on and on. So yeah, I think when there's obvious tension, disagreement, when there's not unity on some of that. I like this explanation that I found on a behavioral level. Here's how you know you need to make some adjustments in order to leave and cleave. If I'm allowing this person or this thing to clearly interfere with time with my spouse, it is innumerable the number of times you will hear, particularly from the wife, he doesn't spend much time with me. I wish we had more time together. Now, that can become overly done. I understand become an idol too, but I think it's just should be an easy process. Like, is this person that I'm spending a lot of time with, like this really great friend or this person at work or whatever, is it interfering with my time with my spouse? Or this thing, this hobby I have, this interest I have, is it clearly interfering with my primary relationship? I am more devoted to this than him or her. So I'm more devoted to this person or this thing than I am my husband or my wife. There is very little time left for my spouse. I spend more of my free time with this person or thing than I do with my spouse. unfortunately, some people use those kinds of things as a way to stay away from their spouse. Their relationship is not good, and that's not a good situation. So we're at a crisis level by then. On a heart level, I thought this was good. My heart wants to talk or think about this person or activity more than my spouse. And I bet that's true of all of us at some level with in certain seasons of our life. I'm more excited about being with this person or thing than my spouse. So that's a real heart level parameter to look at in order to understand whether I need to adjust as I look at cleaving with my husband or my wife. I inserted in here the take-home resource that was laying back there. Five levels of intimacy inventory. That's not something we're going to go through in class today, but something that you could take home, go through with your spouse. I've actually been encouraged by the number of you who have told me that you've taken home some of those resources and actually went through some of the questions and whatnot that you're to ask your spouse. So if just a couple of you actually do this, that would be wonderful. I would be very grateful for that. It's a good checkup for your marriage. It's just looking at taking inventory on five different levels, emotional, spiritual, physical. I'm not sure that all the five are top of my head, but it's a good thing. And it's a safe way to dig into some areas in your marriage that might need some attention, because it's kind of a disciplined, structured way of doing it. And you can be honest and I think that'd go well. Anybody have anything else that you would want to say about leaving and cleaving before we get to some of the imperatives for husbands and wives?
It's kind of that idea of what we're talking about, evaluating and prioritizing your responsibilities and your affections. What's your top priorities as far as responsibilities and to whom? Because taking care of elderly parents is not bad, but does that interfere with your top responsibility of taking care of your wife? Having some hobbies is not bad, but is it, or friendships, but does that interfere with your top affection, which is your wife or your husband, or working for you? I think it would be important, biblically, going through scripture.
Yeah, I love the way you say, with the priorities. Those are good things. Mm-hmm. Good things to have friends, good things to have hobbies, good things to have other interests. Good thing to take care of elderly parents. It's a needed thing. It's a must thing. So just talking that through together is always going to be important. And ask your spouse, mm-hmm. Am I paying too much attention to this situation, or this person, or this thing that is interfering with ours? Hopefully they'll give you an honest answer.
I think what
you're talking about too, Joe, is our idols, things that we can become idols to us, that are become more of a priority than our spouse.
What if you had a marriage problem and one that the spouse wants to have counseling, but the other spouse don't want counseling? What will you do?
Happens a lot. So, you know, the person that wants counseling should get counseling.
But that other one didn't want counseling.
Yep. You can't force people to do something that they won't do. It's unfortunate. You can pray. But how do you... it's good for the person that wants counseling. There's ways to be more biblically knowledgeable about how to handle a situation like that that can come from good counseling. So that's how I would answer that. So we have covered 10 foxes, top of page 3, I think, that can spoil the vineyard of marriage. I'm just going to ask you guys, just any feedback here, is there one that seemed to most resonate with you, or one that you really was helpful? And then why? And I'll just go through those quickly. Relational distance, selfishness, unforgiveness, sexual immorality, pride and self-righteousness, a marriage sustained by law and not grace, idolatry, did one on coasting, complacency, and inattention. Might be missing one. Anyway, I think that's pretty much the list. And then today's. Any thoughts there before we move on? You're smiling, Nathan. I don't know if that means you're getting ready to talk or you're just thinking back. And okay.
Is someone else? Sometimes I feel relational distance with my wife.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that's fairly common. And I think that's why I think it's number one. Relational distance can be caused by a number of different things, but I just see that over and over. And I think even men, even husbands, long to be relationally connected, emotionally connected. I know we think that the women are more that way, but guys do too, right out of your mouth, Nathan. So appreciate you saying that. Anybody else have anything?
You notice that I can get complacent pretty quickly. Things are going well. Hey, we'll just go and fill our schedule with things, and I'm going all over the place doing different things for work, or which I think are good things, but I can get complacent and I can coast as a husband. So I think that was a good effect as we kind of went through a couple of the questions and things. We realized that, oh, well, we need to get back to spending more time together talking and making sure that I know we're on the same page instead of just assuming we are.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that would kind of be where I would be as well. I think in this room there's probably mostly good marriages for the most part, and you can just, Paul Tripp said that the biggest danger for good marriage is you start coasting and you quit paying attention and doing the things that you did to make it a good marriage. And so that has to be revisited and continually cultivated. You're reaping today what you sowed yesterday, and you'll reap tomorrow what you're sowing today. So you got to just continue to do that over and over.
I think selfishness is a big one, has been for me, thinking more about what my wife can do for me, mm-hmm. what I can do for my wife.
Yep, you're a Lou Priolo guy, and I'm right there with him. Selfishness, number one marriage killer in his mind, and he had a lot of experience counseling over 40 years in selfishness. Mm-hmm. And that's just, yeah, that's definition of sin. All sin is selfishness, thinking of myself, not of others.
I appreciate what you shared about long-term marriages having struggles. I feel like, I don't know, more people talk about the struggles of an early marriage, of getting to know your spouse. So, you know, me not being there yet, but knowing that we need to continue to work on marriage to prevent those problems later on.
Yeah. That's been my goal. Most of you in here are quite a bit younger. You've been married 20 years or less. Some of us, we got 50 years?
54.
Okay. I'm not sure about the FIPS, but
50.
50, yeah. So, yeah, just do today, plan today, have a marriage today that will sustain you clear to the end in a good, fruitful way. That's really been my goal through this. So you don't end up seeing somebody. Not that that's going to be the worst thing in life, but at 70 years old, sitting down with some counselors trying to figure out how we're going to finish well. We hate each other. Literally, that's true. It's just, it's crazy. Anybody else on that?
I think honesty is so important, you know, and it involves trust, building trust with one another. So sometimes that's something that can really be damaging. Some people are habitually stretching the truth or avoiding the truth, and it's so much healthier.
Yeah, I think, you know, trust, honesty, the very first one we did was on relational distance, and the the antidote for that is be a revealer, not a concealer. So, just being truthful builds trust. Learn to trust one another. So I wanted to just get to the imperatives for husbands and wives, and I think this is probably a group of people that understand and know what the imperatives are. The indicatives as well in Scripture, but what are the New Testament commands directed to wives? Wives, you get to answer this.
Submit to your husband.
Submit to your husband, yep. That's why I wanted a wife to answer. That's on the wife. That's not on husbands to subject your wives to yourself. This is something that only the wife can do. That's very important. What else?
Proverbs 31 has a ton, but like to be industrious at home, to elevate your husband, to do him good, train your children, don't tear down your house. This is more other parts of Proverbs, but don't nag.
Yep. Don't nag. Yeah.
Titus 2 summarizes a lot of that too. Mm-hmm.
Titus 2? In that is included what? What to your husband?
Titus 2 tells older women to train younger women to love their husbands and children, be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind, submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled.
Yeah. Where to? Wives are to love their husbands. And then the rest of that list. Thinking of one more, it's in the New Testament. It's in Ephesians 5. Jen?
Oh. If her husband's disobedient, he can be won over without a word, without a gentle and quiet spirit.
First Peter 3?
Yeah, no, I'm like, locked away. Lock that one away.
I'm sure it's a temptation to think just the opposite, like winning without a word. Like, I need to, how's that going to work? How's he going to get it if I don't tell him? What does Paul tell wives at the very end of Ephesians chapter 5?
Respect your husband.
Respect your husband. We'll get to these in a little bit, in just a little more detail. All right, husbands. What are the New Testament commands directed to husbands? I'm not purposely throwing out the Old Testament. I just wanted to get to the apostles' directives, commands to husbands.
Live in an understanding way.
Live with them in an understanding way. Very good.
Love your wife like Christ loved the church.
Yep.
Time to sacrifice.
Ephesians 5 is just as Christ. Five times. Okay, what else?
Sacrificial living for her, putting her needs above your own.
Yep.
Submit. Husband, submit to your wife.
Okay. Yeah, Ephesians 5. 19 or 20 says submitting to one another. I think that is a command given to the church in general. But yes, there is a command in that way to, as a mates together. Direct commands, husbands to wives, what else?
Did Joe say love or give up? Love your wives?
Yes. Joe said love your wife is
okay.
But
you should we're commanded to make a distinction between how we treat our wives. They're the weaker vessel or the precious vase. I know Davis used that illustration versus, you know, just the common vessel. Like, so there's a unique, we're supposed to treat her differently, treat her more with more care, cherish her as Ephesians says. But there should be a special, I treat my wife in a special way that I don't treat anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, says live with your wife in an understanding way as a weaker vessel or less strong. I think that really is literally physically, but I think it's also the preciousness which comes from the cherish. You mentioned the word cherish.
We need to recognize them as co-heirs.
Co-heirs?
Not greater than them.
Great, good one.
Providing for your family and those of your own households are worse than believers.
Yep. Definitely. Protecting and providing. I think the nourish word has a providing underlying meaning to it as well.
Hey, John. I know Ephesians 5:22 says, wives, submit to your husband. It's same thing as husband submits to your wife.
It does not say that in that verse.
No.
I'm not sure what you're asking.
It says, wives, submit to your own husband.
Own husbands?
Yeah.
Yes.
But that said, me, husband, submit to your own wife.
I don't see that in the text.
No. It'd be equal part. Is it the same thing?
No, I think that text is getting to who's the head of the home. Christ is the head of the church. He's head of man, and man is head of woman. So it's an authority, submission. Like that word submit means to place yourself under someone else's authority. It's kind of a military term.
Okay.
So it doesn't say that the husband should do that to his wife.
Okay.
Okay, is that clear?
Yeah.
All right, good.
I'm not married. So.
Okay. Let's see. I think we got most of them. Oh, there's one in Colossians, husbands, love your wives, don't be embittered or harsh as well. We're to worship in the water of the word. And I think there's another one, we're to honor her as well. So if you'll flip the page, last page, or at least on mine, it's the last page. Got some, but not all, of the New Testament scriptural references. Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. In the same way, you wives be submissive to your husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. There's the respectful part again. Titus 2 was brought up, train the younger women to love their husbands, to love their children. I think there's seven commands there that older women are to train younger women to do.
John, I've heard it said that in Titus chapter 2, the word love there, the young woman to love their husbands, is not agape, but phileo. So it's not a matter of teaching the younger women to like lay down their lives or just to serve, but rather to like
affection
or to enjoy their husbands. Like, do you have any comments on that?
I chose not to take a special Sunday and get into the depth on all of these, but I think that's really a great point. In Ephesians 5, when it says, husbands, love your wives, it is agape love, unconditional, sacrificial. I think you're exactly right about that, and I think there's a reason for that. So it's not that the women aren't supposed to sacrificially love their husband as well, but I do think that is the friendship, the phileo kind of love. And I thought about this. Why did Paul write to the Colossians, say, husbands, love your wives and don't be harsh or bitter to them? Why did he have to write that? Because it happens, right? It's corrective in nature. Like, that's a man, isn't it? We'll get to what harsh is in a little bit.
Like, the husband's the authority, but they can't be
Yeah. Because men can tend towards hyper headship. Some men can go the other way and become very passive and not lead. So that command is, don't become bitter, don't be harsh to your wife, but love them. So again, I say, Ephesians 5:33, each man must love his wife as he loves himself. So men, there's another commandment. We are to love our wife like we love ourselves. We take care of ourselves. We provide for ourselves. We protect ourselves. We should our wife as well. And the wife must respect her husband. So why did Paul have to command wives to respect her husband? Anybody brave enough to say it?
They weren't respecting their husband.
Probably weren't, yeah.
He said.
And that word for respect probably, it's phobia, which is fear, but obviously it's not. That's not the context. It'd be more the reverence or respect. Like there's a wife should have reverence for her husband. And I think he had to write that because I think that's easy not to for a wife. And I hear men saying, I don't think my wife respects me. She disrespects me, and it makes him angry. I hear that from husbands at times. So, and then the question comes up, is he deserving of my respect? You can go down that trail as well. But do what the scriptures say, and it will go well. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. That could be a whole class time. Here's one from 1 Peter 3:7. In the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she is your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should so that your prayers will not be hindered. And there's a certain connection here between the way a husband treats his wife and the way his prayers are answered or hindered. Husbands, love your wives. Do not be embittered against them. That's from Colossians 3:19. Some translations would use the word, do not be harsh against them. This word embittered comes from a Greek word that means pointed. See men, if this connects, pointed, sharp, shrill, to produce a bitter taste, animosity, ill-tempered, rude, caustic, resentful, intensely unpleasant. I think a guy can become that way if we're not careful. I put the NIV there, which does use the word harsh. Husbands, love your wives, may not be harsh with them. So what are the antonyms to harsh? So I think it's always important. This is what you shouldn't, don't be harsh with them. What should you be? Well, I think the scriptures would imply from that, you should be agreeable, appreciative, friendly, gentle, mellow, mild, pleasant, sweet, thankful.
Manly.
Very manly. Right? We think of those, some of those as feminine traits, but I think the mild comes in, like can really be at an intensity level that's over the top, that produces a sharpness to it. Questions, comments on harsh or respect, any of those?
Patience is the opposite of being harsh.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not patient, I'm harsh. At least by.
It doesn't mean that your wife hasn't given you an occasion to feel that way. You know, like we sin against each other. We're going to sin against each other, but the difference is that we're patient, like David was saying. Understanding the patience that was given to us, understanding the sacrifice of Christ, and patience that God has towards us when we sin. Just using that.
James just as Christ, right?
Just as Christ.
Yeah, just as Christ. It always comes back to that. Yeah, I think it's not, there's all kinds of occasions to which we could react that way as husbands, wives the other, as well. Like, we are very good at knowing what our weaknesses are, and we know how to provoke one another, right? We can push those buttons, or to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not to occasions to sin or temptations to sin.
I also think it's important that for spouses to remember what the duty of the other spouse is, not to lord it over him, but to your husband, be easier to submit to, be easier to respect, be easier to love. For a wife, be easier to love, be easier to protect and care for. We ought to think about the other, and we're thinking about our responsibilities too.
Good point. So husbands ought also to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. So nourish could have a physical connotation, like going to provide for. It can also have a spiritual one. I think it does, like I'm going to nourish my wife spiritually, just as Christ does the church. I wanted to hone in a little bit on the word cherish. It's only used one other time besides this place. It was used in 1 Thessalonians 2, 6, and 7 where Paul talked about his motherly tender care for his children. He also has a fatherly reference in there. So it's care. So it's to hold dear. And then this is speaking specifically to us. And I think this word and following this command can make more difference in your marriage than you would have any idea. To cherish your wife. That's to hold dear, to show affection for, to cultivate with care and affection, to keep warm like a bird sitting on a nest. So how warm is your home? Are you cherishing your wife? Is the temperature of your relationship, is it warm? I found some, I'm not going to go through all of these, but I found some ways that a man can cherish his wife, which will nurture a vibrant, connected, intimate marriage. Ask her what brings her joy. It's an effective way to strengthen your relationship. What makes you feel loved and appreciated? What brings you joy? Show her dignity and respect. Respect is fundamental to a healthy marriage. Address your wife with kindness and admiration. Let her know that she is your treasure to the world. Be her sanctuary, not a tempest. You as a husband should be a source of comfort and quietness and confidence and strength to your wife, not a source of anxiety. Avoid behaviors or words that inflict pain. Make your relationship with her a safe space where she can be secure, valued, a place of peace among the storm of life, which is just, life's crazy, right? Stay unwaveringly loyal. Give her your complete heart. This will build trust in a relationship or marriage. And I think this kind of goes back to leaving and cleaving a little bit. Like, you should be loyal to your wife. And there are many times when I've heard of couples that have, the husband will side with his parents in a situation and against his wife, and that can go public, and that can really become ugly. So there has to be a loyalty that goes along with cherishing your wife. Protect her at all cost. Shield your wife from distress. Provide her with security and love. That's an instinct among men to be protective. So do that well. Other ways to cherish your wife: share loving words generously. You look beautiful. I love you. Proud of you. Heartfelt words that nourish her spirit. lessen her burden. Try to find ways to practically love her, assisting with daily chores. Respect her family connections. I think loving her parents and siblings and your in-laws is very, very key. Defend her from negativity. Stand up for her if others mistreat her, whether it's family or acquaintance. Be her defender. Establishing boundaries to maintain peace and security. Here's one, prioritize her above all. After your faith, make her your primary focus over work, hobbies, or even friends. When she knows she's your priority, it cultivates a deep emotional connection and reaffirms her importance in your life. Pray for her regularly. Pray for your wife regularly. I might have a couple more here. Here's one. Listen with full attention. When she talks, set aside distractions and genuinely listen. Another one is forgive quickly. We talked about that in an earlier class. Be her biggest supporter. Admire her. Remind her of her beauty. I think both physically and who she is in Christ as well. Celebrate her publicly. Maria would probably be embarrassed that I'm saying this, but she loves it when I hold her hand in public. This is my woman, and I cherish her. Anticipate her needs. This is tough, and I know that it's nice when our women tell us, our wives tell us, but don't wait for her to voice her desire. Surprise her by addressing her needs in advance. That tells her that you've been thoughtful and you've thought through, you've thought about her. Sometimes you might miss the mark, but that's probably enough. We're running out of time, too. Guys, you ready to go? Okay. A treasured wife becomes a radiant partner, right? We take the initiative. So I didn't get to it, but the very last point I was going to get to was just a final thought from Ephesians 6. Your marriage is under attack. Your marriage is under severe attack. It's the first institution that was created by God, and you don't have to look very far to see the devil's work in destroying through worldly ideology, satanic, demonic philosophies that are coming against marriage. So I had Ephesians 6, 10 through 18. I think it's interesting when Paul gets done writing the book of Ephesians, but he gives directions to husbands and wives and children and employers and employees, then he ends that. He says a final word, and then he gets into the spiritual warfare. So don't have time to go through that, but maybe you can read that at home. Put on the full armor of God. Hold up the shield of faith. And men, cherish your wives. Husbands, cherish your wives. It'll go well.